Chapter 7. Juncture, and in which each of us may be useful to the other. An exchange, Mr. Eglanton. Do you take? Do you mean an accommodation bill? Said Eglanton, whose mind ran a good deal on that species of exchange.
Pooh, nonsense, sir. The name of our firm is, I flatter myself, a little more up in the market than some other people's names.
Do you mean to insult the name of Archibald Eglanton, sir? I'd have you to know that at 3 months, nonsense, says Mr. Woolsey, mastering his emotion.
Here's no use a quarreling, Mr. E.
We're not in love with each other, I know that.
You wish me hanged, or as good, I know that.
Indeed I don't, sir.
You do, sir, I tell you, you do.
And what's more, I wish the same to you transported, at any rate.
But as two sailors, when a boat's a-sinking, though they hate each other ever so much, will help and bail the boat out.
So, sir, let us act. Let us be the two sailors.
Bail, sir? Said Eglanton, as usual mistaking the drift of the argument.
L.L. bail no man. If you're in difficulties, I think you had better go to your senior partner, Mr. Woolsey.
And Eglanton's cowardly little soul was filled with a savage satisfaction to think that his enemy was in distress, and actually obliged to come to him for succor.
You're enough to make Job swear, you great fat stupid lazy old barber, roared Mr. Woolsey, in a fury.
Eglanton jumped up and made for the bell rope.
The gallant little tailor laughed.
There's no need to call in Betsy, said he.
I'm not a-going to eat you, Eglanton. You're a bigger man than me.
If you were just to fall on me, you'd smother me.
Just sit still on the sofa and listen to reason.
Well, sir, proceed, said the barber with a gasp.
Now, listen. What's the darling wish of your heart?
I know it, sir.
You've told it to Mr. Tressel, sir, and other gents at the club.
The darling wish of your heart, sir, is to have a slap-up coat turned out of the 8 liers of Messrs.
Lindsay, Woolsey, and Company.
You said you'd give 20 guineas for one of our coats, you know you did.
Lord Bolsterton's a fatter man than you, and look what a figure we turn him out.
Can any firm in England dress Lord Bolsterton but us, so as to make his lordship look decent?
I defy him, sir. We could have given Daniel Lambert a figure.
If I want a coat, sir, said Mr. Eglanton, and I don't deny it, there's some people want a head of hair.
That's the very point I was coming to, said the tailor, resuming the violent blush which was mentioned as having suffused his countenance at the beginning of the conversation.
Let us have terms of mutual accommodation.
Make me a wig, Mr. Eglanton, and though I never yet cut a yard of cloth except for a gentleman, I'll pledge you my word I'll make you a coat.
Will you, Honor Bright? Says Eglanton.
Honor Bright, says the tailor.
Ugh.
And in an instant he drew from his pocket one of those slips of parchment which gentlemen of his profession carry, and putting Eglanton into the proper position, began to take the preliminary observations.
He felt Eglanton's heart thump with happiness as his measure passed over that soft part of the perfumer's person.
Then pulling down the window blind, and looking that the door was locked, and blushing still more deeply than ever, the tailor seated himself in an armchair towards which Mr. Eglanton beckoned him, and, taking off his black wig, exposed his head to the great paraquier's gaze.
Mr. Eglanton looked at it, measured it, manipulated it, sat for 3 minutes with his head in his hand, and his elbow on his knee, gazing at the tailor's cranium with all his might, walked round it twice or thrice, and then said,
"It's enough, Mr. Woolsey. Consider the job as done.
And now, sir," said he, with a greatly relieved air, "and now, Woolsey, let us have a glass of Kirakoa to celebrate this auspicious meeting."
The tailor, however, stiffly replied that he never drank in the morning, and left the room without offering to shake Mr. Eglanton by the hand.
for he despised that gentleman very heartily, and himself too, for coming to any compromise with him, and for so far demeaning himself, as to make a coat for a barber. Looking from his chambers on the other side of the street, that inevitable Mr. Walker saw the tailor issuing from the perfumer's shop, and was at no loss to guess that something extraordinary must be in progress, when two such bitter enemies met together. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.